Thank you, Debbie. Okay, good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. What a lovely, great crowd we here today. I'm going to call to order the Senate Committee on Workforce. Today is Monday, February 27, 2017. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 828. I'm going to ask Deborah, our committee staff here, to summarize the bill. And before we get going, I really want to thank everyone coming down to the Capitol today. I guess we have a lot of people here who are out in the overflow area. It's tremendous to see so many people here caring about such an important issue. We have, like I said, a lot of people here who want to listen to what's going on, and then also we have, just from what I knew about before hearing the seeing the sign-up sheet, 11 different panels ranging from 2 to 4 individuals wanting to speak. And then we haven't even counted how many people have signed up to testify in addition to that. So we're going to go ahead and try to hear from as many people as possible. There is a strong likelihood, obviously, that we won't get through everybody. This is just the first hearing that we're having on this bill. And there's a lot of discussions around the content of this and where the state is heading on this subject matter. So if we don't get to it today, we'll an individual will try to go over it another day. So I just wanted to rest everybody assured that there is a game plan. We probably won't get through everything today. So I'm going to go ahead and have Deborah summarize the bill, please.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. SB 828 establishes a right of workers to express a schedule preference free from fear of retaliation or discrimination, but does not require employers to honor all schedule requests. It also requires all employers to compensate workers who report to work when their shift is canceled or reduced within 24 hours of the scheduled start time. SB 828 provides that employers with 25 or more employees in Oregon or 100 nationwide who are in the retail, food establishment, and hotel-motel industry sections are subject to additional provisions, including good faith estimates of average hours per week and expectations for on-call shifts, advance notice of schedules, predictability pay when schedules change, employee rights to discuss scheduling preferences with employer and to rest between shifts, and access to additional hours before new employees are hired. A worker asserting a violation under SB 828 can file a complaint with BOLI or file a civil action. BOLI may assess a statutory penalty payable to the aggrieved party that is $500 for the first violation and $1,000 for subsequent violations.
Okay, thank you, Deborah. I wanted to also bring to folks' attention that there is what we call a dash one amendment, which means an amendment that has several provisions in it, about 10 different provisions changing different sections of the law are being drafted as we speak. So if everyone could keep an open mind, we're here to have a discussion about this issue, and please know that some amendments will be coming along. So we're just going to get the conversation going, and we can talk more about the details of the amendments as we go through the process. So I'm going to call up Senator. Oh, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, I just had a quick observation and a question. I'm new to this committee.
Yes.
But why is it that almost every bill we have is standing room only and overflow and everything?
Well, that's because, Senator Hansel, because you're here. And there are really people really want to hear what you have to say.
So if I wasn't here, we wouldn't have it?
I think that what we're seeing here, Senator Hansel, in all seriousness, is that between PERS and between pay equity, and this, we're also going to be talking about family leave at another time. We have a lot of families in Oregon, a lot of individuals and families whose lives are impacted by the decisions that we make here in the Capitol, and we want to hear from them and see, make certain that we're setting up a legal infrastructure that helps our average working family instead of making their days too hard. But hopefully, these are very lovely people, I'm sure. I'm sure they'll be very nice to us.
And I'm sure you feel the same way about the employers.
Yes, we do. We have all sorts of employers here to talk with us. And we have employees, we have experts, we've got the whole gamut here, okay?
Got it.
All right. Okay, is everyone ready? Okay, I'm going to call up Senator Michael Denbro and Representative Paul Hovey. Is he going to be joining us or just?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. So we'll go ahead and go with you for now. And then if we could have Dr. Mary King, Kevin Billman, and Mike Savaggio ready to go after Senator Denbro, that would be great. And then after that, we're going to have Bill McKibben, Julie Dutton-Harris, and Paul Paz speak after that. So welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the Workforce Committee, it is great to see you all. I'm Michael Denbro. I represent Senate District 23. That's Northeast and Southeast Portland in the Oregon Legislature. And I look at you all with a great deal of nostalgia. back when I was chairing this committee, nobody ever showed up to our hearings. Oh, whatever, so. anyway, I bring before you a very important bill dealing with a very important problem that's being faced now, particularly by low-wage workers here in this state. And it's one that surfaced for me personally a couple of years ago as we were starting to work on the issue of paid sick leave. As you know, we did a lot of outreach to workers. We're talking to them about the challenges that they were having, maintaining a balance between work and family, and their lack of access to paid sick leave was a huge challenge that they were facing. But as we were having those conversations, we were also discovering that there were other challenges that were kind of related that they were having in keeping their lives together while doing their job as good employees. And there were a lot of those problems had to do with a lack of predictable schedules at work that they were facing. And this was something that, from what we were hearing, was particularly acute, obviously, for workers who had family obligations, and also those who were juggling multiple part-time jobs, as all too many low-wage workers find themselves having to do. And then a related group of people who were having a challenge was those who were trying to get ahead by going back to school and taking courses while they were working, and they were finding that was becoming increasingly difficult to do because they were not getting their schedules with any degree of predictability or stability. And so they were finding they weren't getting their schedules until, in many cases, just a day before or a few days before they were expected to come into work. This particular problem was also being seen by the city of Portland, which, just if you'll take yourself back a couple of years, you'll remember that the city of Portland started work on paid sick leave about a year before the legislature did. And they, too, were having these kinds of conversations with workers. And the city was starting to look at setting up an ordinance, was doing the research for passing an ordinance that might address this problem of lack of predictability on a local level. As we were going through the process of approving paid sick leave here, we came to an agreement that we would move forward on paid sick leave, but we would put a temporary moratorium on the ability of local governments to kind of go their own way, develop their own programs with respect to scheduling, while the legislature took some time to look at it, to study it, and to see if we couldn't come up with something that would be a policy that would work for the entire state. So Representative Paul Holvey, who's the chair of the House counterpart to this committee, the House Business and Labor Committee, he and I created a work group to look at this problem of predictable schedules or the lack of predictable schedules and the challenges that it was creating for people, with the aim of coming up with legislation that could be considered here in this session, which is what brings us here, in fact. We had a work group that met for a number of months starting last spring. We heard from a number of national experts on this subject and heard, for example, from somebody who's really been doing cutting-edge research at, I think it's the University of Chicago. And we also, at the same time, as we were meeting as a work group, the city of Seattle was finalizing a long process that they had been engaged with for a number of months, which involved a lot of deliberation, a lot of research using the University of Washington, and conversations with business to try to come up with an ordinance that would work for Seattle. And while we were, we had a lot of conversations with them. They testified by phone several times. And we, over the course of the deliberations of our work group, we decided that the way that Seattle was going really made sense for us as a state as well. What they had decided to do was to sort of to narrow the world that they were focusing on, the business world, to large operations, focusing particularly on hospitality and retail. That's where they were seeing a high degree of a problem. And a lot of it had to do with, I assume some people will be talking about new technology, new software that's out there that makes it easier for employers to schedule their workers in a just-in-time kind of manner, so that people could be scheduled right up to the last minute to adjust to any kind of changes that were going on. What we also heard, though, was that that same technology can be used very effectively to give workers adequate notice and to do so in a way that was not detrimental at all to the business practice. So through all that, we came up with a series of principles and elements that led to this bill that you have before you today, Senate Bill 828. So the focus of it is, our goal, as I said, was to focus on larger national retail and hospitality chains, and the minimum expectation that workers, we felt, should have is a 2-week notice period. They should know 2 weeks in advance what their work would be, so that they could make appropriate childcare arrangements, et cetera. We also decided that there were some levels of just, you know, kind of basic fairness about scheduling that really should apply to all workers. Most notably, giving them the ability to meet with their employers and request a change to their schedule if a change to their schedule was needed for family reasons or school reasons or other work reasons, or, you know, those kinds of things, and not fear retaliation for raising the question, because we were hearing from workers that they felt afraid, actually, to even ask for a change in their schedule, because they were hearing from employers' response being, you know, if you don't like your schedule, go somewhere else. And that seemed really inappropriate to us. And then at the last minute, for me, you know, I became aware of Oregon at one time Boley had a rule that prohibited employers from requiring workers to show up for work, but then if there's no work for them, just sending them home. And we no longer have that prohibition. And as a result, we have a number of workers in all sorts of industries who find themselves, in effect, perennially on call. And they have to be available for work at all times. And then if they show up for work and, you know, they've gotten their kids into childcare, they've taken the bus to work in a way that might take an hour or two, or who knows, and then they're told, well, you know, we actually don't have any work for you today, but we think we probably will tomorrow. That, I think, most people would agree is an unacceptable and unconscionable way to treat workers. And so efforts to address that problem were also added to the legislation. And that's what you have before you. Those are the main features of it. And the people who come after me can speak to the details of the bill. You know, at the tail end of things, I found myself with a changed assignment, and I have kind of lost my intimate contact with this bill, but I remain very, very much committed to it because it's really important for workers in this state. So with that kind of background to today's presentations and feedback, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Does anyone? Senator Hansel.
Oh, go ahead.
Just a quick question. I know you mentioned Seattle and their emphasis on retail and hospitality. Do you know of other states that have legislation as comprehensive as this?
None that has passed. I think there are a number of states now are working on legislation. At this point, the work has been at the local level, the city level, in terms of what has actually, you know, gone into effect.
Senator Hansel.
Senator, as you put your work group together and as you worked on it, I appreciate you're a very diligent person. I appreciate the thoroughness with which you approach issues of concern. Did you have any businesses or employers as a part of that work group to get their input as the as you worked on the provisions? And if so, who were they?
Thank you for speaking to my diligence, Senator. I did diligently invite a wide distribution of business interests. After our first meeting, most of them decided they didn't want to be part of the work group from that point forward. You know, a lot of that, to be honest, had to do with just the overall atmosphere around ballot measure 97, which was getting underway at that time. There was, you know, as I understood it, there was a sense that this was an anti-business bill, just as Measure 97 was an anti-business ballot measure, and enough was enough. I think I'm not characterizing their letter in the exact words they gave, but I think that was kind of the gist of it. And I will say I really regretted that. We did have some business participation. But I was hoping for a broader range because one of the elements of the bill, you know, as you'll see, is that there are certain exceptions being given for legitimate business reasons. And I was really hoping to help drill down on what some of those legitimate business reasons would be for granting exceptions or modifications. Unfortunately, they weren't there. And so I assume, though, you will hear their concerns today, if you haven't already. And so maybe after the fact, we'll be able to integrate them into the bill so that we can make sure that what we've accomplished here really is what the goal of the bill is, and that is to find a balance between the needs of workers and the needs of employers. I believe that there is a balance to be found there, and I know that this committee is going to get there.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Would it be possible to get a copy of that letter? Did you received a letter
absolutely.
From business?
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Senator
Dembo.
Thank you. Okay. We're going to go ahead and call up Dr. Mary King, I believe from PSU, Kevin Billman from UFCW, and Michael Savaggio from Working Families Party. So just to remind folks in the audience, generally when another legislator speaks, we don't turn the clock on and time them. But like I said, when we started, we have a lot of people here to testify. So I'm going to ask everybody from this point forward to speak for 3 minutes and so that we can have everyone talking the same amount of time. So we'll go ahead and start with you, Dr. Mary King. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to address you. I'm afraid I anticipated 4 or 5 minutes, so I'll try to cover my ground. I'm testifying today on a new study that I co-authored with two other faculty colleagues, Rahi Reddy and Ellen Scott, both from the University of Oregon. This is that study, and I believe you all have a copy, I hope, as I'm going to be brief today. This is the first Oregon-based study on the prevalence and impact of irregular scheduling practices that are dramatically changing the way that employers schedule workers, particularly, as you've heard, in retail, fast food service,
and hospitality facilitated by new software. What's emerged is, as Senator Dembrough has described, very short notice of scheduled shifts, frequent changes to schedules after the schedule has been posted, requiring employees to be on call with open availability, scheduling people for widely varying start times, work days, even numbers of hours, sending people home early if business is slow, and requiring people to work late one night and early the following morning. I'm learning a lot about this. My niece is living with us now. She works at Whole Foods, and I now hear about it at the dinner table. Our state and federal labor laws don't address these issues, and our labor market data don't capture these practices because both were created with the assumption of regular schedules. So to understand what's going on here in Oregon, we interviewed 750 people for up to an hour, mostly on the street or on public transit, and found that of those, 1 in 6 had the experience of having less than 24-hour notice of a work shift, and large proportions faced each aspect of the scheduling. We supplemented with analysis of data, census data, to see exactly how we could accurately characterize people in these highly impacted occupations, and conducted 27 in-depth interviews to more fully understand the effects on people's lives. Our findings, which are detailed here, are that all of these practices are now prevalent in Oregon, that people in these jobs are just as likely to have kids at home as the labor force on average, and be even more likely to try to pursue further schooling. They're reporting serious negative impacts on health, family life, relationships, friendships, community activities, and even difficulty scheduling medical care. They're under serious financial strain, have low incomes on average, much lower than average, and they're more likely to be relying on food stamps and to live in low-income families. For these reasons, I'm very concerned, as are my co-authors, that irregular scheduling is a poverty trap, that people don't have access to adequate hours, they're not able to go to school and or to hold a second job because they need more predictability. It's very harmful for kids. They're affected by their parents' stress, who find it, in addition to their other impacts, impossible to maintain.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Okay, Mr. Billman.
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Canope, members of the committee. My name is Kevin Billman, and I'm the Legislative and Community Action Director for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local 555. We represent over 20,000 workers in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Our members work in several industries, including retail, meatpacking, and healthcare. We are a diverse group of workers who have grown into being the largest private sector labor union in Oregon. We respectfully urge you to support Senate Bill 828 and provide working Oregonians with a fair work week. Far too often, workers in Oregon, especially those in the retail, food service, and hospitality industries, are being scheduled in a way that gives them little to no control over their life. Many receive work schedules with very little notice, often less than a week, but sometimes as little as the same day. They have no say in their own work schedules. They do not know from week to week how many hours they will work or when those hours will be. They do not know what their weekly paycheck will amount to, what their life schedule will be, when they will sleep, how they will take care of their family obligations. These inconsistent schedules are wreaking havoc on family lives and economic security. Workers simply cannot realize the American dream when they have only a few days' work notice of work schedules. They don't have a predictable paycheck. When they can't schedule childcare or health care, when due to these employment practices, they are unable to go to school, get a second job, or start their own business. Unfortunately, many of these workers, although they would rather not, are forced to use our social safeguards like food stamps and Medicaid in order to survive. Employment is intended to lift people out of poverty and keep them off of our social safety net, not drive them into it. At least that is what Oregon primary school system taught me. Oregon taxpayers should not be forced to foot the bill just because profitable corporations are trying to maximize profit, even when it means chaos for their workers. Senate Bill 828 is a start towards solving these problems. This Fair Work Week proposal would bring stability to workers' schedules while still allowing businesses the flexibility they need to operate. It gives workers more say in their schedules and more stability in their lives. Both employers and employees would have flexibility in scheduling. Senate Bill 828 incentivizes adequate notice of schedules and provides compensation for employee flexibility in situations where short notice schedule changes are necessary. It gives workers a reasonable number of hours between work shifts to rest, both for their health and for their safety. Senate Bill 828 provides the opportunity for workers who want to work more hours with their current employer the ability to actually receive those hours if they are available. It increases the possibility of workers moving toward full-time employment and potentially increased employment benefits. Fair Work Week is about respect and dignity. It is about giving hardworking Oregonians a sense of security and leveling the playing field for employers who are already doing the right thing. It's about work-life balance. It's about a fair economy that works for all Oregonians. It's about finding ways to strike a balance between the needs of employees and the needs of employers. It's about moving workers off the social safety net. It's about the American dream and the ability of all Oregonians to achieve it. Today I'm here on behalf of the members of Local 555, and we are encouraging you to support Senate Bill 828. Yes, it's about respect.
That was amazing. You got done just right on time. That's impressive. Now everyone else has to do that too. That was pretty good. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Savaggio. And then just to remind, we'll have, after this panel, we're going to have Bill McKibben, Julie Dutton-Harris, Paul Paz come up. And then after that, just so people can be ready, Kaylee Game, Emerson Wood, and Haley Anderson after that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio. I'm here representing the Oregon Working Families Party. When this bill came across my desk for the first time, and I talked to the party, I thought, gosh, I better look into this and make sure that it doesn't affect my other life as a business owner. You know, a little bit of self-preservation kicked in as a habit. So I read through the bill and realized that our business is pretty much doing all of this already, and what we weren't is not really that difficult to achieve. I think that that's why you're going to see a lot of employers and employees here both testifying in favor of the bill. As Senator Dembro indicated, we cast a very wide net when we looked for input into this. And we heard from businesses that either do this already or are interested in doing this because they find that when they treat their employees right, when they are already engaging in these policies, they find a healthier, more effective workforce as a result. And so it was important to us that as we cast that wide net and as we found that balance, we maintained worker flexibility because we heard from workers who said, I actually do want to work as many hours as possible. I do want to swap shifts. I do want to pick up a closing and an opening. And so you'll see that this bill allows broad discretion for workers who actually are interested in working late or opening earlier or picking up additional shifts. It was also very important to us to maintain employer flexibility, especially with the last winter that we just saw. You know, when we saw what happened to worker schedules and employee schedules and employer schedules in light of an ice storm or in light of utilities not being able to be conveyed to a business. So we wanted to provide for those allowances. And I think that when you read into Section 10, you're going to see that this is a lot more flexible than I think it might appear at first blush. And that strikes, I think, the right balance. But still, we referenced the set of amendments that are coming down the pike, dash one amendments, and because I have 49 seconds, I'll go over those relatively quickly. Section 3 reflects the old Boley rule that Senator Dembro alluded to. We're going to bring that a little more in compliance to what that old Boley rule used to be that the state businesses were engaging under for 14 years. We're going to require that workers actually show up to collect that show-up pay. Section 6, we're going to make a little bit easier for the employers so they're not required to honor scheduling requests in every circumstance that's in that list. In Section 10, we're going to clarify that employees don't get to double dip and additionally compensate themselves under Section 3. And in Section 12, we're going to provide avenues for employers to hire immediately if that need exists. And good bills should pass. A lot of fantastic work. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Swager. Thank you, everyone.
Question?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you.
It's okay to ask questions.
Of course it is, Senator Hanson. I stand corrected.
Well, the gentleman, I'm sorry, in the middle.
Kevin Belmont, with Kevin. The Food and Commercial Workers.
I know when I was a county commissioner and we bargained with our unions, work week was always a major component of bargaining, especially the Sheriff's Department when we had flex schedules and round the clock and whatnot. If this is important to your union's member, is it a part of your bargaining operation? And why wouldn't, I guess, yes or no, and why not?
Yes, it is part of our bargaining. Yes, many of these protections our members have, but their counterparts at non-union employers do not. Levels the playing field for our employers. as I spoke of in my testimony, so that all are held to the same standard. Certainly, collective bargaining agreements could do more, but there would be a minimum standard that would be set for all employers. And yes, in the private sector, we do bargain for our work week, fourth week.
Okay, Senator.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I may just point out Section 17 in the bill, just for clarification, if there is a collectively bargained agreement that is equal to or better than what's in this bill does not create an additional remedy right. for the employer. So there will be no double dipping.
Okay. Senator Kittle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mary, you indicated that in your study that you interviewed 700 workers, and one it sounded like one in six said that they had had the 24-hour issue. Did you interview any businesses to find out why that might exist?
No, we didn't. We were looking to see if this was just going on, and we were interviewing people on the street and on public transit.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay.
So,
yes, Senator Hanson.
I really appreciate it. I've got your study here, and I appreciate that. The whole policy was a result of interviewing on public transit and on the street in Portland? That was your database for the...
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
I think there are two things that I would say there. One is the policy is not based on our study, as I understand it, but probably on national experience and what people are developing around the country. And second, I would say that our study was looking to understand the prevalence and impacts of these practices in Oregon. And we interviewed in other cities than Portland, and we interviewed people who it ended up that 59% of the people interviewed did work in Portland and 41% worked elsewhere.
Follow up?
Yes, Anderson.
Census for Oregon, did any of your database be in my part of the state, which is Eastern Oregon? Did you interview anybody out there and how many?
I did not interview people in Eastern Oregon. The list of places that people are from in the Appendix A, and I'm not aware that people are from Eastern Oregon. They are from rural areas such as or out in Coos Bay and further down south. The census data that we looked at to characterize people in these occupations does represent the entire state, which is why we went to it, to make sure that we could accurately represent the situation and characteristics of people in highly impacted occupations.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're going to go ahead, like I said, have Bill McKibben and Julie Dutton-Harris and Paul Potts come forward, please. Hello, everyone. I don't think I've had the pleasure of meeting any of you. I just wanted to remind you to state your name and if you're with an organization or under what capacity you're here to talk with us today about. So,
Paul, would you like to start?
Yeah, my name is Paul Paz. I'm a career waiter of Oregon for 37 years and still slinging hash and loving it. I have you have copies of my presentation. Given the time element, rather than read it, I'm just going to highlight it, and you can read the rest of it for yourselves.
That would be great. Thank you.
Some of you I recognize have probably waited on you. That's also part of my job in being in the hospitality business. As a single parent of three children, when I started my career 37 years ago, I found it to be very flexible to take care of my family. And one of the advantages was to be able to pick up shifts or get rid of shifts, depending on my family demands. I did have the unfortunate circumstance that one of my children went through a bone marrow transplant about 25 years ago. He survived. But during that time, had it not been for the time flexibility of my employer and my peers to be able to pick up shifts and drop shifts as needed to attend to my family and or work other jobs, second jobs, to where I could sustain us financially, we would have never made it. And I've worked in the full service side, so I'm speaking from that perspective. One of my sons graduated from college 2 years ago. He could not get a job in his field of study. I got him a job with a full-service restaurant. He worked for the summer. He has two children. He's married. He was hired part-time to fill in for summer. He worked overtime quite regularly for most of the summer, provided handsomely for his family. It also solved the problem of getting replacements for vacation people that were of the staff that were going on vacation. So it was a real plus for everybody. It was a win-win-win, especially for our customers. Three percenters. There's about 3% of the people that are employers and 3% of the employees in my business that are cheaters. They do bad things, and they take advantage of the system. This particular bill is trying to remedy that small portion, and I think it's very unwise to try and legislate common sense. When you're trying to make calls for the exceptional moments, you can't make policy across the board on it. Employers have to, and employees have to be allowed to make those calls by themselves on their own terms when they happen. The reality of our business is that a lot of our employees are short-term, 2 years, 2 weeks, 2 months. Having employers to make keep records on these people for 3 years is absurd. That's just an incredible amount of record-keeping for short-term employees. Clopens, that's a phrase used for when a person comes in and I open in the morning. Excuse me, I close at night. I have to be back in the next morning, and I'm opening the restaurant. This is a handsome shift to have. This is the shift that I wanted, and a lot of my family people that work with me, they want that shift as soon as possible because that's big bucks. They can make a generous income in a short period of time. Penalty hours. I cannot see for if I'm a worker Clopen that my employer should be penalized time and a half. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you want to finish that thought, sir?
No, I can't see my employers being penalized for a time and a half rate when an employee wants that shift, is willing to work it, and it puts them in a position where they make a good income and it provides extra time to do the other things in their lives.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
You can move the microphone. Yeah, perfect.
Hello, thank you for your time. My name is Julie Dutton Harris, and I have worked in the restaurant industry for the last 19 years, all the way through high school, college, and then into now. I'm currently employed at Buffalo Wild Wings here in Salem as a bartender and a server, where I've worked for the last 5 years. One of the most lucrative benefits of working in this industry is the flexibility in scheduling, and that flexibility is particularly attractive because the demographic of most restaurant employees is largely based, made up of people that are in college or that are parents who highly value a working environment that's flexible enough for them to meet the demands of outside life without the pressure of having to work the same schedule or workload week to week. You know, the ability to pick up extra shifts when I was in college during spring break, for instance, when class was out of session, was really helpful to supplement income during times that made work more challenging, such as finals week. Now that I'm a mom and in a different chapter in my life, likewise, the ability to release shifts to others without consequence when family vacations come up or school plays or doctor's appointments happens really helps me meet both my familial and financial needs. Of course, receiving an accurately written schedule in a timely manner is undoubtedly beneficial to living a quality life. But equally important is being able to receive a schedule that's written with integrity so that you can trust that the shift that you're working is going to be financially beneficial and account or make up for time away from family and other important responsibilities. It's also really important to receive a shift where the work environment that you're going to be in is something that you can trust will be positive and not negative. Some of the consequences that I foresee as a team member of having mandated time-based scheduling that doesn't really allow for all the variances in the restaurant industry are understaffing or overstaffing. Especially as a mom, overstaffing when there's not enough tables and sales to go around. As a team member, I'm losing a lot of money, and I'm also wasting a lot of time that's really precious to me that I could be spent elsewhere with my family or my daughter. And then on the other side, if there's understaffing happening, the work environment, I can no longer come in and perform my job duties as I would like to, becomes very stressful. And when there's not enough cooks in the kitchen, so to speak, to carry a balanced workload, it becomes a really unfun environment that then guests, which are another big part, their experience suffers as a result. And therefore, again, I'm losing money in the matter of tips that are come from a guest experience. So first and foremost, I guess overall, my biggest fear is that if companies come under a situation where they're fined or held responsible to create schedules that doesn't really take into account the variance that happens. I'm afraid that my right to the flexibility in scheduling will be revoked.
Did you want to finish your thought?
I appreciate that. Yeah. So if in a sense, my employer is unable to, avoid costly penalties or keep up with tedious record keeping, then I'm afraid that they will revoke my ability to pick up and release shifts to meet my individual needs, and then therefore eliminating the flexibility that makes this industry worthwhile for me.
Okay. Thank you. You did a great job. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Taylor. Committee members. My name is Bill McKibben. I'm the head of operations for the Buffalo Wild Wings franchise here in the state of Oregon. We started in this state 10 years ago. We now have 11 restaurants in the state and roughly 900 employees. We've also got businesses in three other states. I started in the industry when I was 19 years old. I started as a busboy while I was going to college, and I was attracted to the industry specifically for the fact that it was one that could work around my college schedule, and it was lucrative. The hours that I spent at work would be high dollar hours for me. I really enjoyed the industry. I thrived. I met my wife in the industry. My career has progressed through it. I've never left. My oldest daughter now works in the industry, and my two younger daughters fully plan on joining it when they're old enough. Flexibility is the key. We, as Julie mentioned, the industry is populated with young people, and I speak primarily of full-service casual dining. I don't have experience in the grocery business. I don't have experience in QSR. But from a casual dining perspective, I will tell you that it's unpredictable. And Buffalo Wild Wings is perhaps the most unpredictable because so much of our business is based on what happens in sports. Consider the World Series. It's a seven-game series. But it could go four games. It could go all seven. We have to schedule that weeks in advance. And if we have a full staff scheduled for Game 6 of the World Series that never happens, paying penalty wages to reduce those staffing levels for what would be an empty restaurant, that's a fear of ours. The other thing to consider is weather, inclement weather. Consider the environment that we had here this last winter in Portland. We need to be able to adjust as our volume adjusts. I think that my understanding of this legislation is that it's particularly burdensome in terms of administrative requirements. Multiple forms, as Julie mentioned, people like to trade shifts, swap shifts, pick up shifts. And so on the voluntary side, how do we maintain records for years to protect ourselves so that in the future someone couldn't say that was a mandated involuntary schedule change. And I think that, you know, we've already seen some of that in San Francisco where businesses are just restricting schedule changes altogether. And I think that that damages what this industry attracts so many people like Julie, like myself, like my family members, makes it difficult for them to do what they want to do and gain what they can out of the industry. I acknowledge that there are employers out there that engage in bad practices.
Okay, just want to just finish your sentence and then.
Yeah, I'll finish that sentence. I would be happy to participate in any work group that wants to seriously discuss this, and there are components of this that I think are fair.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well,
thank you for your time.
So let's go ahead and bring up, do we have any questions? Okay. Let's go ahead and bring up Kaylee Game, Emerson Wood, and Haley Anderson. And then next up after that will be Betsy Earls and Sean Miller after that. So if somebody out there, hopefully someone's listening and they can track them down, Betsy Earls and Sean Miller. And then after that we'll have Kate Newall, Graham Trainer, Naomi Mendoza, and Rebecca Camberling. So Kaylee, Emerson, and Haley.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask committee staff here, so as people are bringing up things, because I mentioned at the beginning that there are several amendments to the bill that are going in, and there's some details that are already in the bill, I'm already noticing that folks are bringing up some concerns, and some of them have been addressed in the bill. So if you can help us keep track of those so that we can report back next time about what's in the bill. For example, I believe the weather situation, that there's a provision in there for inclement weather, but we'll get that clarified as we go forward so that we can clear any of that up. So welcome. You guys can decide who would you like to have go first.
I'll go first. Okay. Chair Taylor, Vice Chair, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Kaylee Game, and I'm asking you to support the Fair Work Week Bill, SB 828. I just want to address that I have worked in four different states continuously over my period of working time, and so I've seen various different treatment for workers in, like, the customer service and restaurant world. And I feel that this is more aiming at people with less seniority, like those people that just spoke. They've been in this dynamic for a long time, and they know how to make it work for them. And we're more aiming at the people that are just rising up, just getting in college, just starting their families, that are going to get less support from their employers. So I worked as a barista off and on for 9 years until I was, like, over scheduling issues with my daughter. For most of the time there, I found it to be very stable, and I could transfer anywhere and walk straight in 40 hours a week if I wanted. When I started working in the state of Oregon in December of 2015, the manager that hired me was excited for my experience and willingly took me on, knowing that I had limited availability as a parent. At the time, I was going through a divorce and taking care of my 3-year-old daughter as a single parent with full custody and enrolled in full-time student. This manager, unfortunately, was let go, and when the new manager arrived, he was upset that such a seasoned partner was not available to work full-time at a store that was struggling to keep up business. Because I was such an experienced employee, another manager asked me to work at her store. After a one-on-one discussion with my current manager about whether or not I should transfer, my current manager asked me to stay at the store I was at. They now schedule 3 weeks ahead, which I know is a lot better than other places, but for 3 weeks in a row, he gave me 0 hours after our conversation. When I approached him about my hours, he said that as a manager, he was not obligated to schedule anyone that doesn't suit the store's scheduling needs, even though I'd been working the exact same schedule for 6 months. At this point, I asked to be transferred, and when I was approved, the district manager had me sign a waiver acknowledging that the new manager was not obligated to actually schedule me, and if I was employed by them. Eventually, I was let go without any notification by the manager of the new store because she called me in to cover someone's shift on a day that I was available but had not been scheduled for. During that day, because I had been scheduled to work, I couldn't arrange childcare and could not come in for the shift. When I called to get my next schedule, she said I wasn't on it because I was let go. Thank you.
Thank you. You did a great job. Thank you for sharing that.
Hello. Chair Taylor, Vice Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Emerson Wood, and I urge you to support Senate Bill 828, the Fair Work Week Bill. Okay. I've seen a lot of hard situations my friends and coworkers have experienced because of bad scheduling, and it has also impacted me personally. I've seen people's schedules being shortened to the point that they are forced to quit only because they are in school and are frowned upon for their special schedules. I've seen managers with no regard of your home life changing your schedule daily or scheduling you a closing shift until 3 a.m. going back a few hours later. These are just some easy examples. I also have my own story. I was a kitchen manager at a newly expanded restaurant, and the expectation for me to both get the job done and keep my job was that I was asked to work 80 to over 100 hours a week. Often I even slept at work because it wasn't worth driving home to only come back so soon. It was made clear that I had no choice but to accept those hours if I wanted to work there as a manager. Spending so many hours on my feet, I developed blisters. Eventually, those blisters opened and my feet became bloody. With not being allowed to have enough time to rest, my feet never got to heal. Because they didn't have any time to heal, eventually one of my feet developed a staph infection. Shortly after, I developed a staph infection in the other foot. In the course of a year, I was prescribed antibiotics 3 times. I was doing everything I could think of to cure the staph infection, and finally, after a year, it resided. It's been about 4 years now, and from the aftermath of my body fighting the infection, my immunity was down, which led to the development of an autoimmune disease, alopecia areata, which causes round bald spots on you. For me, on my scalp. I am now down to only one spot. Hopefully, it'll grow back soon, but could still be years. Or not. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I want to say that I actually met someone a few days ago who had a story just like mine of getting a staph infection in their feet from working too much, being overscheduled and not having a choice. So it's, I guess, it's not a rare situation.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Hi. I'm Haley Anderson. Thanks, Chair Taylor and Chair People, for hearing my story. Can I actually ask you a question? Allowed. Is the wording in the House bill the same as the wording in the Senate bill?
The bills are the same.
Okay.
Bills. Yes.
So I just wanted to note that I was listening to the group before us schedule saying that they were fearing that they would lose their ability to swap shifts or pick up shifts. I just want to mention under Section 10 of this bill, which I've read several times and have in front of me right now, this is actually House Bill 2193. Additional compensation does not apply to voluntary picking up of shifts or swapping shifts between employees. And for me, my restaurant uses hot schedules, which would actually automatically document that for employers and wouldn't require them to have the burden of extra paperwork. So I really think that all three of them would have nothing to fear with this bill passing, because they'd still be able to pick up those shifts, do those clopins, you know, have the flexibility to pick up those hours without any kind of burden on their employers. So I just wanted to note that, because I was like, I read that yesterday.
Thank you. You're well informed. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So now I'll give my actual testimony. I'm here to advocate for the Fair Work Week bill, because if it passes, it's going to greatly improve my life and the lives of my coworkers. All of my siblings are in the service industry. My roommates, my best friends have all been in the service industry or the retail industry at one point in their life. My entire adulthood, I have suffered the negative effects of unpredictable scheduling again and again. When I worked at Starbucks, despite begging my manager to schedule me otherwise, 2 days a week I'd be forced to open at 2:30 in the morning, and 2 days a week I'd be closing and not getting to leave until 1 a.m. This wreaked havoc on my body. I couldn't keep a consistent sleep schedule, and I was constantly ill and depressed. Since I quit, Starbucks created internal policies banning clopins and encouraging consistency, but unfortunately, most businesses in Oregon do not have any accountability to their employees. The restaurant at which I work reserves the right to schedule or change our schedules literally last minute. We will often be sent home after just 1 or 2 hours. We are required to be available for on-call shifts, which bar the opportunity to pursue other jobs or education, but provide no guarantee of hours. One of my coworkers' shifts are constantly canceled when managers think we'll be slow. She's a single mother, and her unpredictable schedule causes her undue stress when she can't arrange childcare. Another coworker with open availability is scheduled only a few days a week and is constantly sent home after just 1 or 2 hours. She's a single mother and she is about to lose her home. Yet another coworker who was hired around the holidays was not given the was not hired with the transparency that in the service industry, especially in a restaurant, we're busier during the holidays. And then after the holidays, you can expect to have a lot less hours. So he was getting 30 to 40 hours a week. And then suddenly last week was just scheduled 2 on-call shifts. And he was having to beg other coworkers to give up shifts so he could make his rent. So this bill is really important to the people that are important to me and that make up our community. And I would highly urge you to pass this bill.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Where did you guys come from today?
Working Families Party.
No, I mean, where, in Portland? Or
Portland, yeah. Portland. We caravan down.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, so let's go ahead and call up Betsy Earls and Sean Miller. Hello, Betsy. Do you happen to know where Mr. Miller is by chance? Coming in, well, why don't you go ahead and get started?
I do know where Mr. Miller
is.
He's testifying on another bill, and he is hoping to be here soon. He thought maybe he could slide in on another panel if you wanted to move somebody
else
out.
Sure, why don't we go ahead and have, is Jeff Stone and Mark Begay here? Can they come up? Can you come up for now? Then you can go ahead and get started, and we'll have them.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries, Oregon Business Association, and the Oregon Retail Council. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony to you today. AOI, OBA, and the Retail Council have significant concerns with Senate Bill 828, which would impose rigid scheduling mandates that reduce flexibility for both employers and employees and would significantly impact our members' ability to manage store operations. Our members share your interest in addressing employee predictability and flexibility concerns when it comes to scheduling. Members who fit under the bill's definition of large employer have different methods for working with their employees to shape the best schedule, but none of our large employer members, as defined under the bill, are without any policy or practice at all on this important subject. Many employees choose to work in retail because it allows them to work a flexible schedule, and offering flexibility allows us to attract a diverse and talented pool of team members, from college graduates starting a career to adults looking for part-time work to students or retirees. Under the proposal as it's written right now, employers will be less likely to make changes to their schedules, such as adding hours for employees or accommodating last-minute employee requests due to the penalty pay provisions in the bill. I would urge you, if you intend to go forward with a bill such as this, that we look for areas where more flexibility can be provided to employers, because the way Senate Bill 828 is written right now, it creates too many hard lines for employers to have to follow and a difficult employment scheduling environment. And I'll save you a little bit of time. That's all I have for today.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Canope, and members of the committee. My name is Mark Biggie, and I serve as the president of the Oregon Association of Nurseries. I'm also a third-generation family business owner. My sisters, my dad, and I own and operate Al's Garden Center and Greenhouses. Our business was started in 1948 by my grandfather, Al, and now consists of three, soon to be four, retail garden centers in the Portland metro area, as well as three growing operations where we grow the plants that we sell. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on Senate Bill 828. Madam Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, I would like to thank you again for visiting with our members of our organization a few weeks ago when we visited here in the Capitol. In that meeting, you heard firsthand some of the challenges of our industry that it's facing, and I wanted to come before you on behalf of our organization as well as our family business to express our concerns over Senate Bill 828. In our business and in the businesses of many of the members of the OEN, we rely on flexibility of scheduling to not only meet our needs but the needs of our employees. Both employees and employers understand the business cycles in our industry, and they understand the impacts that weather and market demands have on our business. When the sun's out, we have customers pounding on the doors to come in. When it's raining, you can bowl through the aisles of our stores. As an employer, we also understand employees have times when they may not be able to work unexpectedly or when they may like to work more. We are both flexible and work together to make sure both of our needs are met. This flexibility is paramount to keep people happy and the morale of our staff high. Legislation like the one proposed will eliminate this flexibility with regulations and documentation hurting not only the employers but the employees. We will have no option but to greatly reduce that flexibility due to the burdens placed upon us. The nursery industry in our state is largely an exporting industry and competes in national and global markets. Increased burdens from bills like Senate Bill 828 have a cumulative effect on our business and harm our ability to compete with those in other parts of the country that do not have similar regulations. We're finding ourselves at more and more of a disadvantage, and our products are not as desirable because of the prices we must charge to overcome our increased costs. Please help keep our business competitive and viable and oppose Senate Bill 828. I would love nothing more than be able to pass our business on to the fourth generation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Knoll, members of the committee. My name is Lee Geshwell of F&B Farms and Nursery. We operate a greenhouse and a farming operation in Woodburn. And today I want to address three specific concerns that I have with Senate Bill 828 as it's introduced. I'd be curious to see the -1 amendments. That would be helpful. And those three things are the complicated language of the bill, how the bill applies when contract labor is used, and worker qualifications. So regarding Section 10, compensation for work schedule changes, the language and the requirements are overly complicated. I have a degree from a university, and it took me three reads to even get my mind wrapped around what was stated in that section. And I realize that section applies to large employers who have HR departments and maybe in-house legal staff. But there are many small business owners who are also going to have to apply this law. And for myself, I mean, I'm going to need to create a spreadsheet or something to keep track of all the if-then scenarios that it contains. And when we spend more time on the back end of our business than we do on producing a product or delivering a service, it typically spells disaster. Customers want to pay for value, not for paperwork.
My concerns about contract labor relate to Section 12, access to hours. Given that my staff is probably already working a full schedule, should the need arise for on-demand work, it appears that I must first offer this to existing staff, potentially at overtime wages. And that is also then contradicted in subsection 5, so I'm not sure how that's supposed to work. Many businesses, such as my own, rely on contract labor to flex our staff upwards for short or unforeseeable periods. A good example would be Mark finding out on Friday that the weather's good Saturday, and you know, he's not going to be able to comply with a 3-day posting period or a 2-day notification period for his employees. I mean, the weekend's going to be over and the sales are going to be missed. And on the wholesale end, we're growing live plant material and changes happen daily. So right now I can fill in with contract labor if my staff is already at full capacity. And I feel that's a choice that I have a right to make. And the law seems ambiguous as to how that contract labor piece applies in there. And real quick, last point, I think there is some health and safety concerns with this bill, with the ability to swap shifts and or offering hours available to other employees. It's my responsibility to determine, you know, what is safe for my workers and to maintain a healthy and safe work environment. And so people can't always pick and choose what jobs they're able to do. And as one of the guys, I just want to add real quick, as one of the guys stated, if you're an hourly person and you want to work more hours because that's a direct impact to the bottom line of your family, I mean, I've had people who are fatigued that I really have to send home because they pose a safety threat to themselves and to other workers. And I mean, I understand they want to work more hours, but I can't let people work to exhaustion.
Okay.
So thank you for
your
time.
Any questions? And so what we're going to do is I'm going to add that to the list of items to be clarified. I think there is language about, I think one is, can you clarify for us, Deborah, is one allowed to work extra hours if they choose to in the bill?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so one is allowed to work extra hours, but they're not required to work extra hours.
Right.
Okay, I just wanted to, well, we're going to take down all these questions and then we'll make certain to flesh that all out.
Great.
So that everybody has that.
Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you so much for coming. So we're going to go ahead and call up Kate Newell, Graham Trainer, Naomi Mendoza, and Rebecca Chamberling, please. Have the four of you squeeze in there if possible, if you're all here. I'm not sure everyone is here. You want to go ahead and get started, just in the interest of time? Thank you.
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Newhall, here today testifying on behalf of Family Forward Oregon. We thank you for the opportunity to be here today in support of Senate Bill 828 and protecting many employees from unfair scheduling practices that undermine their ability to provide for themselves and their families. We see these protections as particularly important to women, who make up nearly 65% of the 271,000 workers in Oregon's low-wage workforce, where these unfair scheduling practices are the most common. Unpredictable scheduling happens in a number of ways. It happens when employers give their employees a work schedule with just a few days or even hours notice. It can mean receiving a work schedule that is subject to frequent changes with little notice, disrupting employees out of work responsibilities, and the one that I most often think of is childcare and making childcare arrangements. When workers don't have access to work arrangements that allow them to care for themselves and their families, many get pushed out of the labor market or into jobs that are below their skill level. This is particularly true for women, who are more likely to be in part-time, low-wage work, in part because unfair scheduling practices have forced them to choose between a job that meets their full earning potential or that meets their needs for flexibility and their family caregiving responsibilities. Unfair scheduling causes pay and scheduling instabilities for employees that has far-reaching consequences and impacts their long-term economic security, their health, and children's outcomes. It prevents employees from being able to predict their earnings. It makes it difficult for employees to schedule health and other needed appointments for themselves and their loved ones. It prevents employees from holding a second job or pursuing educational goals, and it prevents parents from planning for consistent and quality childcare, meaning that children are often put in irregular and unpredictable situations. Oregonians are not just workers. They are also family members, caregivers, and contributing members to our society who need to be able to rely on regular schedules and have the opportunity to arrange work schedules around their caregiving responsibilities and to predict their paychecks. We believe that Senate Bill 828 is a very reasonable approach to addressing some of the worst types of scheduling practices. While the main provisions apply only to large employers in specific industries, we think it's a targeted approach that will have a direct and positive impact on thousands of workers who struggle the most with unfair scheduling practices. We believe that workers should have adequate advance notice of their schedules, be guaranteed some measure of predictability in their schedules, and be protected from retaliation for requesting an alternate work schedule. We support Senate Bill 828 because it will improve how employee schedules are managed, with the goal of making it possible for employees to reasonably predict their pay and plan their lives. Thank you so much for the opportunity to provide this testimony, and happy to answer questions.
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Canope, members of the committee, my name is Graham Trainer, representing the over 300,000 working Oregonians of the Oregon AFL-CIO, and thanks very much for the opportunity to testify in strong support of Senate Bill 828 and efforts to ensure fair and predictable scheduling practices for workers. The State Federation, as you know, has been the long-term advocate for greater worker protections and an economy that works for all Oregonians. Despite the good work from our perspective done by this committee and the Oregon Legislature over the last 2 years to do just that, and the strong indicators of the health of Oregon's economy, low-wage workers, especially in certain industries, face ongoing and worsening conditions as it relates to the predictability of their work schedules. As you heard earlier, when one in six Oregon workers are less than has less than a 24-hour notice of their shifts, this is an imbalance in our economy that should not be overlooked. We believe that Senate Bill 828 is one of the most significant pieces of legislation before the Oregon legislature aimed at striking more balance in our economy, especially as it relates to the low-wage and hourly segments of our economy. Just because a worker is a part of the low-wage economy does not mean they don't have children at home or other significant family or educational responsibilities. In fact, according to the study referenced earlier, cashiers and people working in fast food are 2.5 times as likely as the broader labor force to be enrolled in school and attempting to provide a better life for themselves and their children. When a worker facing irregular scheduling practices by their employer attempts to improve their situation by getting a second or, unfortunately, a third job at times, or by furthering their education, this unpredictable reality often makes it impossible to plan for the very things that our broader society would encourage a worker to do to better themselves and their family. While most employers throughout Oregon's economy are doing the right thing, and from the perspective of a worker, use adequate scheduling practices, some employers, especially those in specific industries like the ones laid out in the bill, food service, retail, and hospitality, are often not doing their part and are keeping workers in a cycle of poverty, as you heard earlier. In your efforts to encourage an economy that works for all Oregonians, including the lowest wage workers in our state, we believe that Senate Bill 828 is an important step forward to address the practice of irregular scheduling in the industries where it most often occurs. Thank you again for thank you again for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 828 and the efforts to create a fair work week for Oregon's workforce that are in occupations that, as the study suggests, are projected to add the most jobs to the Oregon economy in the next 8 years. Great. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thanks.
Chair Taylor, co-chairs, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Noemi, and I'm here on behalf of Bicklin Farm Workers Labor Union. We are here to support Senate Bill 828, the Fair Work Week Bill. I have been working with the Woodburn community with workers who have been affected with unfair scheduling. I respect the individuals who have taken the time to speak to me about issues they have encountered at work. These individuals are students, parents, single head of household, people of color, and contributors to the society. We support SB 828 because we need to protect the well-being of workers who give more than just their time. In our community, our family is core to our life. Fair scheduling practices means parents can spend time with their children, students can focus on their education, doctor's appointments can be made, bills can be paid, and we do not have to choose between buying groceries or paying a bill. Our community deserves to live a happy and successful life. Everyone deserves time to breathe and relax because our community cannot live on a day's notice. Thank you for your time.
Hi.
Senator Taylor, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Rebecca Camperling, and I'm here today to testify on behalf of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association in favor of a fair work week and Senate Bill 828. I myself represent both individuals and small businesses, and when I took a look at this particular piece of legislation, I was struck by the fairness of it, frankly. I myself am a small business owner. I have my own law firm, and I do have an employee. And it didn't seem to me that there were any hurdles in this that could not be overcome for small employers. And if you think about the ripple effect, I've had individuals call me and say, I was called into work or I wasn't allowed to work, whatever the case may be that happened, these potential clients. And it was the ripple effect of childcare was the number one concern that I've had from these individuals. They would have to travel great distances to get to their job, usually on public transportation. And as you might know, childcare, you have to pay whether or not your kid is in daycare that day if you schedule it in advance. And so these individuals had to not only pay out of pocket for the childcare that they didn't actually end up needing, but they had to spend hours on public transportation just to get to work and be told, sorry, no can do today. And I've had at least two potential clients call who ended up losing their jobs over this particular scheduling. And so I'm happy to answer any questions, but otherwise, thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. All right. Thank you so much. We're going to go ahead and bring up Shelley Boschart and Ian Tolleson. And is Sean Miller back yet? Apparently not. So we'll have those two come up. Are they here? Shelley Boschart Davis.
I'll text her.
That's it?
Text her.
And Ian Tolleson. Great. Thank you. Hello, welcome. If you could just
hi, good afternoon.
Name and who you're with, please.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ian Tolleson. I'm the Government Affairs Director for Northwest Food Processors Association. We represent food manufacturers in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Our members process raw ag crop in the industry sectors of fruit, vegetable, nuts, seafood, legumes, and anything else the Northwest offers to eat. We are opposed to this legislation. I think first and foremost, our members work very hard to make sure that we create a schedule that is flexible for our employees and for our business. But in the end, this really does hurt competitiveness. It's very hard to have this onerous regulation when our competitors in other states do not. And then there's other unique issues in our industry that just make this completely unworkable. Harvest schedule is determined 24 to 48 hours in advance for fruit and vegetables. It'd be very difficult to adjust schedules and still meet harvest. Harvest schedule also has interruptions due to weather. As you know, sometimes we freeze here in the Northwest, our fruits get impacted. Plants and vegetables mature at different rates. This all makes the time when we bring in that raw crop into our processing facility, it's very, very hard to predict. Excuse me. And finally, there are different crews for different products. And this is something I just learned today as I was driving in from one of our members. They harvest vegetables and they process food that goes all over the world. National, international markets, restaurants, grocery stores, you name it, you've bought it, you ate it. And dependent on the customer's needs, our shipment and our processing changes. And in order to do that, sometimes that requires a different set of crew with a different set of skills to come in and meet that customer need. So you can see it's a very fluid situation. Requiring to have these schedules 14 days in advance is completely unsustainable in our industry. I'm very fearful of what this impact has, not only in food processing, but in the agriculture community throughout the state. Thank you.
Chair Taylor, committee, today I'm testifying in opposition to Senate Bill 828.
My name is Shelley Bossart Davis. We're a small family business. I'm a third generation grass seed farmer. My dad started a trucking company in 1983 with two trucks. We now have 34. My mom does the books. I run the sales and run the harvest crews. My brother is an equipment operator. He's also a mechanic, and he also runs a crew during the summer. And my younger sister helps in the office with payroll. As you can see, we all wear many different hats, and this is very common in a small business and on a family farm. Senate Bill 828, I'd like to say it would just be onerous and time-consuming and very costly, but honestly, for us, it would be a nightmare. One of the sections, 13 and 14, I wanted to speak to in kind of a real-life example with our truck driving crews. Let's say a truck driver needs to request a flexible schedule or ask for a day off, and he shows up and wants to talk to his manager, but his manager's under the truck, and his hands are now covered with grease. Is he supposed to get out, record the conversation, remember to file it later? That section specifically in that real world situation, that could be on top of a baler during the summer, underneath a combine. It's just one of those situations that I don't see working. The next example that I have, we have six different baling and combine crews, each with a crew chief during the summer. Each night at the end of the workday, what we do is that crew chief tells the crew for the next day what time he thinks is going to be the start time. We use technology. We have multiple different weather apps, and in between him and myself, we try to decide what time that's going to be. We might say 9 o'clock, but then we might wake up and it might be foggy. It might be have a lot of dew on the ground. The cloud cover might be there and we can't start at 9. We might have to start at 10 or start at 11. So we're in constant communication with those employees, and never do we have anybody show up and then send them home. We're in constant communication with them. I would like to say we're constrained by the weather, and if Mother Nature would like to give me the schedule, then I would be much more able to comply with some of those restrictions. I wanted to point out that we've got a fantastic relationship with our employees. We offer sick time and PTO long before it was mandated. We know that they have flexible scheduling needs, and we like to work with them as much as we can. Because of weather, because of some of the issues that we deal with in the trucking and the agricultural industry, a lot of times it's just not possible. I do appreciate you letting us speak today, and I just want to say in our industry, in agriculture and trucking, it just doesn't work. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I
ask one question?
Yes, of course.
There's lots of 13s and 14s. Which
section? Well, I just typed it here, section 13, 14 in. The specific one that I'm concerned about, I can email you what I was speaking to.
That would be great, because the one I'm coming to is about a poster, and I think you were talking about something different.
Yeah. Okay, let me take a look at that, and I'll shoot you an email what I was concerned about. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Right, thank you both for coming.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and have, is Jesse Hayes and Iris Hodge here? Okay, great. Why don't you guys come up? And we'll have Matt Swanson. I don't see Emily McLean here. We'll have Matt come up with Jesse Hayes.
Sean just came in, too, if you didn't see him.
Pardon me?
Sean just came in.
Yeah, he'll come up, I think, after. So Jesse and Iris and Matt Swanson. And then after that, we're going to have Sean Miller is returned, apparently very busy day for Mr. Miller, and then we'll have John Wackowitz, John Chandler, and Daryl Fuller speak, and then we'll have Gail come down, Gail Stevens, the drafter of the bill. We'll have her come down. I know she's working away. Elsie's very busy these days, so she'll come down, and we can get some of our questions answered. So welcome. Thank you for coming. Who would like to start?
Matt.
Okay, go ahead.
Sure, I want to start. My name is Matt Swanson. I'm here representing the SEIU Oregon State Council. We represent just over 60,000 workers here in the state of Oregon between locals 49 and 503. I'm going to be relatively brief because I think a lot of this you've heard. And you heard some stories that I think really reflect the need that we see to address this issue of how do we get predictable and reliable schedules for workers, and how can we address that through state law. I think when employees aren't scheduled for a consistent number of hours, what we've seen and definitely heard from workers is that creates a lot of pressure on their home, their ability to manage their bills, their ability to arrange things like childcare. And this legislation tries to get at how do we solve that to give folks a little more predictability at a time when, with automation and other trends in the workplace, we're seeing folks lose some control and predictability over their schedule. When you see workers who are permanently in an on-call status required to be available to show up when given very little, as little as 2 hours notice, this can create a lot of pressure, not just on their family life, but also if they need to pick up another job, how can they balance all of that and keep the one they have when the work hours just aren't coming? And the other thing, and you've seen this in the study, is that this isn't, it's a problem, of course, for those families. You heard the stories. It's also something that's disproportionately impacting women, low-income workers, and communities of color in our state. So as SEIU, this is a great step forward. I think we would like to see this conversation continue. I know that there are some very important stories, and there's a couple of business owners here to talk about their experience, but we would love to be involved and engaged in this conversation going forward. I know that you have the drafter of the bill coming down. I think they'll have some important answers to some of the questions, and we would enthusiastically urge you to support Senate Bill 828.
Okay, thank you. Just because we have to be sensitive to time and we want to have the drafter come down, I'm going to change things up yet again. And so we're going to have you finish speaking. Obviously, you're here. And then we'll have Sean Miller and Jeff Stone come up and speak. And then we'll have to hold over Mr. Rockowitz, Mr. Chandler, Mr. Fuller in order to have time for the drafter to come down. So I apologize for that, but limited amount of time. So go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Taylor and members of the committee. My name is Jesse Hayes. I'm the owner of Archive Coffee and Bar here in Salem and a member of the Main Street Alliance of Oregon, a statewide small business organization. Actually, perhaps you've been to my business for a coffee or a cocktail. As both a coffee shop and a cocktail bar, we're open 17 hours a day. That's a lot of hours to cover. But specifically with those short time of between closing and reopening, there's no way that I would schedule my crew for shifts, for those shifts back to back. I make sure that my employees have at least 10 hours between my shifts. This decision is not only humane, it's good for business. I have low turnover, healthier employees, and a crew who's happy to be there in the morning serving coffee. Some of my employees are students at Chemeketa Community College. So, of course, I work around their schedules at school. I'm happy they are bettering themselves. Plus, I get to see pictures of tardigrades or learn about the plants around TRAPPIST-1, and that's a nice little bonus. It is better for our community to have an educated workforce. And if I'm smart, I'll do my part to help build that stronger future. As I'm scheduling the meeting needs of my business, I also consider some of my employees' second jobs, their kids, the responsibility, and responsible requests for time off. Yes, it takes a little bit of extra care when we write schedules, but the payoff is huge. Good for business, good for my crew, good for my conscience as well. It's about giving a little attention to the quality of life of these fine humans who are working for me. So that's my story. In closing, I urge you to support SB 828 because it is good for business. It is good for our community. And if we want to have a sustainable economy, we need to make fair and flexible scheduling the status quo because hardworking families like my crew can't live on a day's notice.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Iris Hodge, and I'm here on behalf of Main Street Alliance of Oregon. Good afternoon, Chairwoman Taylor and committee. Thank you for letting me speak in support of SB 828. First, I wanted to say we were one of the business groups that attended those committee meetings that Senator Denbrough had through the summer. We did stay and listen and participate because we knew it was important for working families. I'm the outreach coordinator for Main Street Alliance of Oregon. We're a network of over 3,500 small business owners who believe that fair and flexible scheduling is good for our businesses. I've submitted written testimony from a couple of our members who weren't able to be here, Sean Searin and Kelsey Danogian, both in the service industry. They really wanted to be here but had to run their businesses. So I urge you to take time to read those if you can. Some large corporation-dominated business groups will tell you that fair scheduling practices are bad for business. But overwhelmingly, the businesses that I, along with staff members, surveyed by Main Street Alliance over the last year believe that unfair scheduling practices like unpredictable schedules and clopening actually harm small businesses by creating a huge amount of economic insecurity, which weakens consumer demand and in turn hurts their bottom line. If customers don't know if they'll have enough money at the end of the week to purchase an oil change, a cup of coffee, or a meal out with their family, Main Street businesses suffer. Our members know that their employees are their neighbors' customers and vice versa. So when everyone's employees have predictable hours, this boosts consumer confidence. That's one piece of building a sustainable economy, along with fair wages and the ability to take time to care for sick family members. Everyone deserves time to plan for childcare, medical visits, and time with loved ones. Lastly, Main Street Alliance members believe that fairer work weeks for employees in Oregon would level the playing field for small businesses. After all, most small business owners already have these kinds of practices in place. As Haley, the worker, pointed out a few panels back, this policy does not prohibit employees from switching shifts and allows plenty of flexibility to accommodate employers and employees. A Fair Week policy would create a common sense workplace standard, raising the floor for some big box stores in Oregon that rely on treating their employees unfairly to make a profit. Fair and flexible scheduling helps small business owners give their workers the respect they deserve to feel valued and sends a clear signal that investing in their employees' health and well-being is an investment in their business. Main Street Alliance of Oregon and its members support fair and flexible scheduling, and so we urge you to support SB 828. Okay, thank great. You.
Thank you.
Hi. Ms. McClain. Sure you said I wasn't here.
Sure, we'll
okay,
just or? Go ahead and if you can try to, quickly as possible, we want to have time to answer questions of the drafter, please.
Let's.
Thank you for coming in at the last minute.
Thank you.
Chair Taylor, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Emily McClain, and I'm here representing the 44,000 members of the Oregon Education Association. So we approach this issue and our support for Senate Bill 828 from the perspective of what makes a good school day and the ability for students and families to tackle their efforts in high educational achievement. So I'll just say that our educational professionals know firsthand the challenging and detrimental impacts that inconsistent and unknown scheduling can have on Oregon students. Our schools run on a very strict schedule and rely on planning far in advance so that Oregon children and families can have consistency in everything from drop-off to pick-up times to bus routes and to the start and end of school times and extracurricular activities. Hourly workers currently have no say in their schedules, and that means that every day Oregon families with children in Oregon public schools can work hard to plan their week and build workable schedules together and then be met with unpredictable scheduling through last-minute notifications of shift changes and cancellations. And we believe that this has a direct negative effect and impact on their ability to plan for their children around the school day and that schedule. Unpredictable scheduling can also mean unpredictable income. And as a result, families are not able to plan and budget for their needs from everyday basics like food and bills and rent to making decisions about whether or not a child can participate in extracurricular activities. And extracurricular activities have unfortunately become more out of reach for low-income students. Participation in extracurricular activities means that you need to have transportation to and from school and home before and after the school day. And if your family has a member or two with unpredictable scheduling, it is a major barrier to student participation in educational and enriching activities that are associated with positive outcomes such as higher educational attainment and greater future earnings. So I'll just conclude by saying that this legislation is about supporting hardworking Oregon families by giving them security, predictability, and involvement in their work schedules. And we believe that this legislation is good for the individual directly impacted, but also for their family and children and workers who need predictability and regular schedules to do their very best in school. So I urge your support for this bill.
Great. Thank you so much. All right. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Okay, we're going to have our final panel come up, and that is Mr. Jeff Stone and Sean Miller, please. And then, like I said, Mr. Rockowitz, Mr. Chandler, Mr. Fuller, and then we had all sorts of people who signed up in addition that we will be putting on OLAS the next hearing so that, and we'll try to get to the other people on this list at another time. So thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Sean Miller, I'm here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association. Thanks for having me back. I was next door testifying. I'll be really brief. We do oppose Senate Bill 828 and what we believe is an onerous statewide scheduling mandate, which we believe punishes employers and employees. I will say, and I know a lot of has been said prior to me, but I will say that the bill differs in respect to the what was recently passed in the city of Seattle, and I just wanted to point out to you that we have provided kind of a comparison, even looking at the city of Seattle's ordinance and what Senate Bill 828 does. And so I won't go through it in entirety because we don't have enough time, but I do want to point out on page 9 the specific lack of a collective bargaining agreement exemption, which City of Seattle addresses. And and although a CBA exemption doesn't address all of the concerns from my members, those that do collective bargain within my membership, scheduling is a big part of the negotiating table, and we believe it should continue to be at the negotiating table. While we oppose 828, we do believe that the local preemption on scheduling mandates should continue. As you all know, in 2015, the legislature passed Senate Bill 968, which put that two-year preemption in place. And although we can have the discussion here in the state legislature, we do believe that, a permanent preemption is necessary and should be passed this session to prevent that patchwork of what we believe to burdensome scheduling mandates. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions, but thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Canope, members of the committee, I'm Jeff Stone, and I serve as the Executive Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. Nursery industry is one of your largest sectors of agriculture, and I'm grateful for your time today. I also am particularly thankful that you heard from two of my members, mm-hmm. and thank you for the flexibility to come up with Mr. Miller. And so
I thought
just,
you were giving up your spot. Little did I know. Okay.
I rarely give up my spot, Madam Chair. just a couple. You have my written testimony, which I will not belabor with you this afternoon. But there are a couple areas where I'd like to highlight, especially as it pertains to agriculture. Weather, you heard about weather and transportation. This last winter is a perfect example of how weather can be disruptive, not only in terms of a retail operation like you heard from my board president from Alice Garden Center, but also on the wholesale nursery side. It's unsafe for employees to come. You're not going to get much done on frozen ground. And so weather can be a big determinant. We have a year-round workforce, and so we don't ramp up and have the big flexibilities as others do, but I would raise that as an issue. With transportation, it is particularly vexing because we're at the mercy of when a truck arrives. And so often we work very hard with our trucking industry, but oftentimes it's between 12 and 72 hours before a grower will know that a truck's coming in. And when a truck comes in, and we would love for you to come and witness the madness of loading season, but when a truck comes in, it's all hands on deck. And so we value our employees. We want to provide them a job that is meaningful. They grow plants. They take great pride. Our members take pride in employing folks. But I just want to highlight that those two areas alone would raise concerns for me in this bill, and so we're happy to talk with you and the members of the other members of the committee about how this bill should move forward, and I thank you for your time.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thank you both for
thank
coming.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to go ahead and have Gail Stevens from LC, the drafter of the bill, come up. We had a lot of things that came forward. This is our opportunity to ask her questions. I'll let members go first before I ask my questions. Does anybody have anything you want to ask?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to know, since we changed the schedule on Rakowitz, Chandler, and Fuller, if we're going to owe them bonus time It was at the last minute.
Well, there were 11 panels.
I was concerned because
I know
how much these guys make and we can't afford it.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'm not.
I suppose it doesn't apply to lobbyists.
We do have a lot of other people who did sign up also. So this conversation is sure. Not done after today.
Of course not.
So do you have questions for the drafter?
Senator Hansel, do you want to?
I don't have any.
You don't have any? Okay.
Okay.
I don't have any right at the moment.
Okay. Well, Senator Gelser, do you?
Not right at the moment.
Okay. Well,
I'm interested in seeing the amendment to know which of my questions matter.
Yes. Well,
that
we
will
have
a lot.
Yes. Well, again, informing everybody, we have this process where you have the bill, and then people have the opportunity to amend it. It takes a little bit of time for the lawyers to draft the changes to the bill, and so I wanted to communicate that to everybody, that those amendments are being drafted, although even we don't have the details of them. We have some cliff notes for them.
So, Madam Chair, I will ask one question.
Yes, sir.
So what does a business do, according to this bill, if they've given the schedule the 2 weeks in advance and somebody calls in sick, say the night before or the morning of, are they obligated to try to if they try to call somebody else in, is that going to be a violation of this, and therefore are they going to have to pay bonus time?
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Knoop, you're probably referring to Section 10 of the bill, which would only apply to the larger employers in the three sectors.
Okay. Clarify which sectors those are, please.
They would be the three sectors to which the majority of the sections apply, as defined by the North American Industry Classification System, are food services establishments, hospitality establishments, and retail establishments. To go further into the bill, that would be where they employ at least 100 employees nationwide and 25 employees in the state of Oregon, I believe, as the bill is introduced as written. To the extent that an employee were to volunteer to an on-call shift, many of these provisions have concessions for a consensual call-in. To the extent that an employer were required to come in, there are places in the bill where a penalty wage would apply.
So it would apply in that case if it wasn't voluntary. Let's say the cook calls in sick and, we have no cook for the restaurant. That's sort of a problem. So you got to call in another cook. So in that case, the cook doesn't want to come in because he's got other plans or she has other plans. And so would they then have to pay penalty wages in that case?
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Knoop, the situation you described, possibly 1 hour of pay in some cases. Yes, 1 hour of penalty wages would probably apply to the situation you just described for the employers to whom this provision applies.
So that doesn't really seem fair to me that a business would be penalized because somebody called in sick.
Well, let's just clarify. You know, I hear what you're saying, but let's clarify. Wouldn't the employee be requesting paid sick leave?
Chair Taylor, Vice Chair Knoop, I believe so. The employee who calls in may be paid, may or may not be paid sick leave. That's probably a different question. To the extent that this question relates to whether or not the employer cannot find a voluntary employee to come in and has to mandatorily require an employee to work a shift without the notice required under certain sections, in some cases a penalty wage would apply.
Okay, well, thank you for bringing that to our attention. We can look into that more. Can you talk to us a little? Did you have any more questions?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
I had one question.
Yes.
So in the three, is a food processing industry, that's different than a food establishment, or is food processing included? I guess, is it just the hospitality-related food retail, or is it all the way up the food-making chain from the grower to the distributor to the wholesaler?
Chair Taylor, Senator Gelser, I am not entirely familiar with the North American industry classification system. There are many, many subcategories, but my understanding of the food services establishment is that it is more toward the restaurant industry. I can look. I will have to get back to you on that to see the level to which food preparation services, the large employer provisions apply to, but there are provisions in this bill that apply to all employers.
I got a question.
go ahead.
I was just going to say something that would be really helpful for me is if we could have a crosswalk of this is what applies to everybody, and these are the entities for whom the majority of the bill applies to, especially around at what point in the process of food does this kick in.
Right. There are certain provisions that are statewide, depending on size, correct, and there are certain that only apply to some industries. Is that correct?
Chair Taylor, yes, that is correct. The majority of the provisions in this bill apply only to specific sectors who employ a certain number of employees. There are provisions that apply to all employers, however.
Okay. Senator.
Well, when you say 100 people nationwide, my goodness, that's every motel chain, every hotel chain, every restaurant chain, every fast food chain, every Safeway producing chain. That's everybody. And then locally, if it's 25, it would seem to me that people that are exempted out would be very minuscule. Wait, is that correct?
Chair Taylor, Senator Hansel, to the extent that the employer employs 100 employees nationwide and 25 within the state of Oregon in those three industries, with a few caveats for the restaurant industry, if they have 40 restaurants nationwide, yes, it would apply to those employers. That is correct.
Okay. Can you clarify, there are several questions about weather. Can you please explain the provisions around weather?
Chair Taylor, to a certain extent, while there are provisions about natural disasters, it depends on the specific circumstance, but if an employee, the provision that applies to most employees, which is being referred to as sent home pay or on call pay, is really if their shift is cut, they're called in and their shift is cut short. So I need a more specific question.
Okay, so let's have this.
The
there's a restaurant on the Columbia River, and I work there, and I, as a waitress, and I think that I'm going to work on Sunday a full 8-hour shift and wake up and it's raining, or I show up there and the skies open up and it starts raining after I get there, and it becomes apparent that no one's going to come to eat, not very many people are going to come and eat at the restaurant. Can you explain how the bill would impact that situation? Would I be sent home and without pay because the employer obviously can't control that it started to rain? Or what would happen in that scenario?
Chair Taylor, to the extent that this is a large employer provision, while there are certain passages written for natural disasters, et cetera, it is possible that a penalty wage would have to be paid in those circumstances. I do not see in the bill as introduced exceptions for weather for certain employees if the employee does not work the full shift scheduled.
Okay. Well, we had discussed in the work group about inclement weather for the scenario that I just brought up. And so let's have that clarified about how that works all the way through, because I want to make certain that that is addressed. Did you want to comment on that?
Chair Taylor, thank you. To the extent that any amendment request might address that, I apologize for not being able to speak.
No, of course not. You can't read. I mean, I know you're working like crazy down there. So then the cloping issue, is that addressed in the bill? So closing and opening, because we already have, there already are statutes in place that have restrictions, correct? So how does the cloping work?
Chair Taylor, for the larger employers who are covered under Section 9, yes, there are certain restrictions that without the employee's consent, you cannot schedule an employee for fewer than you have to give them a 10-hour window between schedules, or you have to pay time and a half for the hours that overlap if you do not give them that amount of notice. You can't get double penalties if another penalty applies. This one is restricted and is the only one that would apply, but there are circumstances under which if an employee does not get the required amount of time between shifts that a penalty wage would have to be paid.
Okay. And then swapping shifts, if employees want to switch shifts for whatever reasons, is that permissible?
Chair Taylor, most of the provisions do not apply to a consensual situation where an employee has voluntarily given up a shift or picked up a shift. So no, usually where there's consent, there's no penalty wage that would be involved. I can't think of I don't think any of the provisions would penalize an employer for a voluntary.
The employees are free. So if for some reason I wanted to not work on Sunday for any reason, and I found someone else to, for example, Senator Knope wanted to fill in for me, he could do that if he chose. If I asked him and he did that for me, would he be allowed to do that? And I would be allowed to ask him, he could do that, et cetera?
Chair Taylor, as the bill is written, the employees to whom this bill applies would be able to do that.
Okay, I know.
Even if there isn't a 10-hour differential between his previous shift?
Chair Taylor, Senator Hansel, the provision allows for consensual picking up of shifts and giving away of shifts even without the 10 hours as the bill is introduced. Thank you.
Because a person can choose to work. If a person wants to do cloping, as it's called, close and open, if they choose to do that, they are allowed to do that. Correct?
Chair Taylor, that is correct. Section 9, subsection 1 begins, unless the employee requests or consents to work such hours, as a qualifying introduction to this provision about the amount of time that needs to take place between shifts.
Okay. And how much notice does an employer need to give an employee if they're going to make a change in their schedule?
Chair Taylor, it depends on the provision that applies to the employer. 14 days posting in most cases for the large employers. 24 hours of advance notice if it's Section 3 that applies to all employers. It depends. I could probably help clarify that at a later time.
Well, we are right. Does anybody have, I have additional questions, but I want to be sensitive to everyone's time.
Yeah.
Oh, no, because it's the end of the committee schedule. I want to be sensitive. And I have to go to the Transportation Committee. So at 5 o'clock, so we have to go ahead and wrap up. Thank you so much. This is just our first hearing. We're just starting the conversation. Let's have the amendments will be posted soon, and we can talk about what's in the amendments and go over the bills in more detail. So thank you so much for coming down. I appreciate it. Does anyone else want to ask anything for now? Nope. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 752. Our next meeting is on Wednesday, March 1st. We will have an additional meeting on the PERS Contingency Reserve Fund and a public hearings on several workforce-related bills. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting on Senate Workforce Committee. All right. Workforce Committee. All right.